listening to CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Squeaky Curd, a food show coming to you from CGLO, where we examine our relationship with food here in Montreal. Today, we're going to be looking at the foods that we eat in times of celebration of the passage of winter to spring. Different cultures have different traditional celebrations that are marked at this time of year, and Montreal being a globalized city means that people of different backgrounds are preparing a variety of feasts as the winter months come to a close. Today, we're going to be looking at how four different communities are celebrating as we pass from winter to spring this year, what food those celebrations include, and since everything has to have this angle now, we'll also examine how these traditions will be impacted by the pandemic. It's worth noting here at the top that this episode will by no means be comprehensive. As I mentioned, Montreal is a very culturally rich and dynamic place, and an attempt to present a complete survey of every culture's springtime food celebrations in an hour-long radio show hosted by someone who definitely still has a lot of blind spots would be kind of ridiculous and nearly impossible. The hope here is to shine a light on how people are adapting their celebrations to this unique year and observe where we all meet and diverge when it comes to the marking of the end of a long, arduous winter. Every year, it feels like it's never going to end. The nights get longer and longer until the sun goes down close to 4 in the afternoon. Here in Quebec, the snow accumulates week after week without melting until you're walking through shoveled pathways lined with snowbanks as high as your hips. Temperatures drop to below negative 20 degrees Celsius, and in our first pandemic winter, it was not unusual to stay housebound for days at a time. And then, one day, you hear the faint trickle of snow starting to melt. The last beams of sunlight stretch past the time you would think of as afternoon. Daylight savings happens, and you're granted even more precious daylight, and every week that goes by gets warmer and warmer until you can hardly remember what everything used to look like covered by snow. Spring is here, and winter did actually end. This is cause for celebration. In Quebec, this tradition is marked by the natural, opportune moment for tapping maple trees for syrup harvest. Many people say the perfect time to tap a maple tree is when the days are starting to get warm, but the nights are still very cold, so it never falls on the same date on the Gregorian calendar, so it could be anywhere between mid-February and the end of March. I spoke with Stephanie Lauren, who owns Chalet des Érables, a sugar shack in Saint-Anne-de-Plaine, about an hour drive from Montreal. She also co-founded Ma Cabane à la Maison, the Sugar Shack meal delivery program started this year in response to the pandemic.
My name is Stephanie Lauren, and I'm the co-founder of Ma Cabane à la Maison, and I also own my own sugar shack, the Chalet des Érables.
Stephanie's grandfather founded Chalet des Érables in 1948, and after he stepped down, it was run by her mother, and now operations have been taken over by Stephanie and her kids. She talked to me a little bit about the history of sugar shacks in Quebec.
And in Quebec, we have a 7,400 maple syrup producer. And into it, we only have 200 sugar shacks that we serve the traditional meal. The 200 sugar shacks are found in the year 1900. And we are enterprise that live in each generation.
After a maple harvest started, Quebecers would traditionally gather at a cabane à sucre or sugar shack to take part in a bountiful feast, which usually includes a lot of meats, beans, and desserts, with everything doused in a healthy portion of maple syrup. Stephanie talked to me about what a sugar shack feast would look like at Chalet des Érables.
So a sugar shack meal is that we include in each box. It's the traditional meal with the original recipe. And the recipes ended down from generation to generation. Mine are from my maternal grandmother. So you have the croutons, the pea soup. You also have the marinades. The marinades are pickles. We also have red onions. And each sugar shack also do a puff omelette. So it's eggs that we cook in the oven. And it's very like a poofy omelette, very, very, very nice to heat. And we have the hen and the sausage and the maple syrup, the traditional salt pork ring. So it seems strange, but in fact, it's a pork ring that we deepen the salt and then we fry. And we have the beans, the potato, and for sure we have too much dessert. For example, we have the sugar pie, the pudding. Some also offer the maple donuts or even a fried pancakes. But all include for sure the maple syrup and the taffy and the snow. A feast in a sugar shack, it's always a big party. So it's an event that you can organize with your friends, with your family. Everyone eat at the same table. So it's always a very big rectangular table with bench. So it's even not chair. So it's just a big bench and everyone is sit at on the same bench and we share the food. All the foods are in the middle of the table and we share the plates and everyone eat it and put it in their plates. So it's very a casual, simple dinner. But there's always too much sugar and too much food. And after that, in Sugar Shack, we go take a walk in the wood and we learn more about how to make the maple syrup. And then in some Sugar Shack, we can also dance a little bit just to make sure that we lose all those calories. So it's always like that in every Sugar Shack in Quebec.
We also talked about the gap the pandemic is leaving for Sugar Shack owners right now. People can't visit Sugar Shacks for a shared meal because of the pandemic for a second year in a row.
Because we are closed right now because of the situation of the pandemic, we are very sad to not open the doors to all of our friends and family to come and all the tourists that want to visit the Sugar Shack. So we're going to miss everyone. So that's the thing that we're going to miss the most. It's just the people in our place and live not so much special moments, but a family moment that is very, very simple and not complicated. So that's the thing that we're going to miss the most this year for sure.
Stephanie told me how many Sugar Shacks in Quebec tried to diversify their revenues with things like branded masks to supplement their losses from the 2020 season. But still, 40 Sugar Shacks went out of business last year. For the 2021 season, Sugar Shacks had to take another approach to survive.
Last year, I will always remember the day. It was on March 13th, so it was a Friday too, so very scared. It was the eve of an exceptional Sugar Shack season, but we were all closed without any notice due to the COVID. So for our industry, there couldn't be a more bad time because it was with the publicity done, with the full fridge, the canned marinades, the table set, and we saw our Sugar Shack season soar. For the majority of any enterprise, this unplanned shutdown had a hand. But for our industry, it was a whole year lost. More than 90% of our annual incomes had just disappeared while our fixed costs remained the same. So it was very a hard moment. After many, many tears and all the world's effort to diversify my Sugar Shack, we have come to the evidence that 2020 will be a year to forget. So it was filled with despair that I began in last July to call the other Sugar Shack. I take the phone and I say, I'm not going well. You, how are you? And I quickly realized that beyond the survival of my home business, our identity as a Quebecer was in danger if this tradition were to disappear.
Stephanie collaborated with her fellow Sugar Shack owners to come up with the idea of Ma Cabane à la Maison, a box filled with traditional Sugar Shack meals, plus some supplementary digital materials like music to set the ambiance in your home.
The concept is to offer a digital platform bringing together the maple groves of Quebec and allowing the population to order their maple meals while living a traditional experience. So that's the Ma Cabane à la Maison. And without this, I can confirm you that most of the Sugar Shack couldn't pass through the next season. But right now, we just launched this project last week. And we are very, very happy to see that the people are behind us, and we already have more than 20,000 hoarders in every sugar shack in Quebec. And like every owner right now, they are working in their kitchen. They have a smile on their face and they can see a future for their sugar shack. So that's the project, Ma Cabane à la Maison.
The hope for Ma Cabane à la Maison is that you can create that moment of community with the food you're eating and the connection you make with your loved ones, even if it's at a distance.
We just want them to share a very simple moment with a comfort food. And we also include in every box a virtual show lasting 2 hours. And we have a very nice singer who is Daniel Boucher, Guylaine Tanguay, Les Deux Frères, and Yves Lambert. So it's a very nice show that you can watch with your kids or even with your family on a Zoom party. And you can have a very simple moment with comfort food, with nice music. You can even dance in your living room. But I think that everyone will love to live that experience at home.
Ma Cabane à la Maison ran up to April 18th. When we come back from the break, we'll be looking at how some other communities in Montreal will be celebrating the spring with food. CGLO, 1690 AM in Montreal. Hello, and welcome back to The Squeaky Curd. Today, we're looking at different celebrations that take place during the transition from winter to spring and the food that we eat around those celebrations. Before the break, we talked about the Quebec tradition of sugar shacks and how they have had to adapt for the pandemic by pivoting to a delivery take-home model. 1 year into the pandemic, everyone is having to make these types of transitions at this point. And I talked to Kimberly Cross from the Ganawage Tourism Office on the South Shore about how they are adapting their Maple Food Festival this year.
So my name is Kimberly Ganyet-Dahawe Cross. I work as the tourism development agent at Ganawage Tourism. I'm from the Ganyakahaga Mohawk First Nation of Ganawage. And we're located right outside of Montreal. On the South Shore.
The Mohawk have been tapping maple trees since long before colonial settlers came to Quebec. Kimberly told me about some of the legends of how trees started to be tapped and how sap and maple syrup were incorporated into Mohawk cuisine.
You know, one of the stories of how like we became to tap maple trees was that our people were so hungry and starving that we were walking in the forest and a man saw a squirrel, and a squirrel was drinking from the tree, and the man was like, I need to see what this is. So he started copying it. So ever since then, we've been tapping the trees, and we've been, you know, collecting the sap and then boiling it down and using the syrup or the sugar. So we harvest it and we store it, and then in all of our dishes, like if you throughout the year, if you try any of our cuisine, you know, we cook a lot of corn. So there's one, it's corn mush, and it's made with maple syrup. We make strawberry drink, which is made with maple syrup. We make a lot of different dishes, and usually one of the biggest flavorings was maple syrup, because we didn't have a lot of the different spices that we have today, that we do put in our cuisine sometimes, but we didn't have them. So maple was one of the big things that we used. So it's very important, and it's still really used in our cuisine today.
Again, maple tapping season for the Mohawk is about the transition to spring after a long, cold winter. Kimberly explained it's also about giving thanks that after this period of hardship, there's a harvest of what is called the first medicine, or maple sap, so-called, because it was not only used for its flavor in food, but also for its medicinal purposes. Maple sap is called the first medicine because it is the first to appear in the new year.
It's symbolizing that you know, everything is going to come back to life. So because the wind, like the world freezes for us around here, what we would do is we would give thanks to that and thank the trees for coming back this year. And it would give us hope that we would move forward and we would be able to, you know, have a plentiful season, you know, with harvesting and having medicine. So after, you know, after this ceremony in about a month from now, normally they would do medicines because that's medicines are coming up, and then it would move on to what was going to be plentiful in that season. So the next big one I would say would be like our strawberry festival or our strawberry ceremony. And there we honor the first fruits that come out.
In more recent years, the Ganawage Tourism Office has started to invite people to join in their maple food festival, where local businesses' different maple dishes are served and sampled.
So at the tourism office right now, what we're planning is our maple food fest. And what we roll out every year is a festival that honors the one of the first medicines that come out of the year. So for our people, we follow the cycle of ceremonies, which follows the calendar year. And our calendar year starts usually the beginning of January, mid-January, depending on the stars, how they're aligned in the moon. So once that's all figured out, then we see, you know, how many moons afterwards the trees will be opened. And it depends on the weather. So some people gauge it by, after so many days of being really warm and really cold nights, then that's when we can open the trees. So normally in our community, we have an opening of the tree ceremony where everybody gets together and we have songs and dance and food. And then people can start tapping trees because that's it's the first medicine. And for our people, we always relied on the sap that came out of the trees, because it was the first nourishment after winter, and winters were hard. You know, we would rely all winter on our dry foods, like our corns and our beans, whatever squash would carry us over. So there was winter squashes, and we still practice a lot of that today. However, we do have supermarkets that we can go to and buy groceries, so it's not so, you know, devastating at this time of year for our people now. But we still honor the trees and the first medicine that comes out.
This year, the Ganawage Maple Food Festival will be operating under a meal delivery pickup model because of the pandemic. And of course, every business has been coming up with creative meals with lots of maple incorporated.
So we have a lot of businesses who are getting back to us now and saying what specials they're going to have. A couple are going to have like Sugar Shack style meals, like ready to go, so people can come and pick them up, because all our restaurants are still closed and delivery or takeout only. So it's all going to be, you know, upon order and takeout. So we have those. There's also some places that have like smoothies and drinks with maple, and then all the desserts are always like so creative and the best. Like we've had bacon, maple bacon cannolis in the past. We have like, it's just amazing the things that our people come up with. We have maple bacon cinnamon buns also coming out.
In recognition of the changing of the seasons, there's usually a ceremony at the Longhouse, which won't be taking place this year because of COVID. In the past year, none of the ceremonies have been performed with large groups, but Kimberly said that smaller groups go to the Longhouse to continue giving thanks for the seasonal harvests.
So unfortunately now, because of COVID, our festivals haven't taken place since last year. They're still being done by the representatives, like our faith keepers or our knowledge keepers. So they're the ones who are putting, or our clan mothers, they're putting the ceremonies through. So it's a small group gathering of people, but we're not allowed to gather as the community. So people have been encouraged to do their own ceremonies at home.
Kimberly told me that broadcasting these types of ceremonies over Zoom or live stream would not really fit with the tradition of what they're supposed to represent. When people could gather in large groups, they were encouraged to turn off their cell phones if they were going to the Longhouse for a ceremony. There have, however, been a few Zoom classes that people can attend on how to perform your own ceremonies at home. And Kimberly said she felt like this created a more intimate experience and gave people a deeper connection to these traditions.
You know, usually you're there with your whole community and it's emotional and it's spiritual and it's, you know, looking forward. And then doing it in your home, it's much more intimate and still as hopeful and emotional and spiritual. It's just, it's a different experience now with COVID, having to do everything on our own. And it's encouraging people to learn as well. You know, maybe they would just go to, I guess it would be a lot similar to people maybe going to a church or to a synagogue and listening to the prayers that are happening, but not really knowing and understanding them. So for us, you know, going to the longhouse, some people are still in the learning phases because of what happened to us in the past. So our culture was lost and a lot of people are regaining the language, regaining the culture in our ways. So it's kind of a step forward as well. You know, how we're learning to take ownership and independence on doing our own ceremonies and having that, you know, reassurance that we can do it and we have to do it for it to keep going. Because if we don't do it, then, you know, then that's the fear of, well, if we don't do it, then maybe the trees will stop coming back every year and giving us sap, and maybe we won't have a good harvest.
Pandemic notwithstanding, Kimberly says becoming familiar with these traditions again is important, and she hopes people will continue learning when things return to normal.
A lot of people are coming back to going to them. I think there's still a lot of stigma, you know, that's been passed on by residential schools where people didn't attend, and, you know, a lot of people began going to church instead. You know, the value wasn't there to attend and to put our ceremonies through. But now it's back, and it's more important than ever. And we see that as a community, we have to encourage learning. We have to encourage the knowledge sharing and not shame for people not knowing. Because that's the biggest thing, I think, is, you know, people being ashamed for not knowing their culture and not knowing their ways. And you really have to take a step forward within yourself, you know, to take the steps and to learn and to actually attend. So, you know, and once you're there, you know, then you realize, like, where have I been?
After calculating the opportune moment for maple tapping, the Ganawage Maple Food Festival ran from March 15th to April 15th this year. Maple tapping is a natural occurrence, and the marking of its arrival is traditional in Quebec. But it's not the only celebration involving food that happens around this time of year. I spoke to Rabbi Saul Emanuel of the Jewish Community Council of Montreal about how the Jewish community in Montreal marks two springtime celebrations.
Yeah, my name is Rabbi Saul Emanuel. I'm the executive director of the Jewish Community Council of Montreal. And we have various departments in our organization. One of them is the MK Canada's Cultural Certifier that certifies close to 1,000 companies in North America and across the world.
There are two holidays that fall around this time of year, Purim and Passover. These holidays are scheduled using calculations from the lunisolar Hebrew calendar. So this year, Purim was February 25th and 26th, and Passover ran from the evening of March 27th to the evening of April 4th.
So we just passed over Purim, which is when everybody dresses up celebrating the times of Persia when the Jews were saved. But we now move on. In the next 4 weeks comes the big celebration, Passover. And Passover is our exodus from Egypt. It's an eight-day celebration where we only have the famous matzah. And obviously, you're not allowed to have anything that is leavened, that is bread, made from oats, barley, spelt, any of those five items, flour, grains. And everything we do has to be kosher for Passover certified. That's quite intense. It's probably the most intense holiday from the point of view of food. So that's at this time of the year, that's what we celebrate.
Purim is a holiday that celebrates the saving of the Jewish people by Esther from Haman, a Persian official who wore a triangular hat. This salvation is commemorated with a triangular cookie called Hamantaschen, which has a jam center and is covered with poppy seeds. Here's what Rabbi Emanuel had to say about some of the other food traditions of Purim.
So basically, Purim is a big feast where everybody has a bit of a good l'chaim, a good drink. It could be whiskey, it could be dry wine, could be sweet wine, celebrating, enjoying together with friends, celebrating the times, dressing up, having a great time. That's the atmosphere that's experienced of Purim. Of course, giving something to your friend, when it's a mitzvah, it's a positive commandment to give something to a friend on the day of Purim to show that you're befriending somebody, giving them a gift, making them remember the celebration, giving charity, thinking of those who are less fortunate than us on the day, reading the Megillah, the scroll that is read on Purim, and celebrating the downfall of Haman, the wicked person. It's a beautiful, beautiful atmosphere. It's specifically beautiful for children because children dress up, they go to their friends, they're giving them gifts, they're getting a lot of candies, getting gifts in return.
Passover is usually a month later, and it celebrates the retelling of the story of Exodus, when the Jews escaped from Egypt. The first night of Passover involves a ceremonial meal with many different elements representing the different hardships of that story. After the first night of Passover, many Jews will go kosher, which involves many dietary restrictions that different people obey to varying degrees. But the most important thing to give up during this time of year is leavened bread products, as a recognition of the scant resources available during that time of suffering. Rabbi Emanuel talked about the process that goes into cleaning and preparing a household for Passover's arrival.
When it comes to Passover, it's also a beautiful holiday, but in a totally different way. Number one, it all depends how one looks at a holiday and how one celebrates a holiday, what one makes of it, which is the same as life in general. Because there's a lot of work that goes into the Passover holiday. Remember that the houses have to be spotlessly cleaned, making sure that every room and every place, every nook and cranny and cupboard that you may be using over Passover has to be spotlessly cleaned, completely rid of all the unleavened and the bread and the candies that may have been put in there during the year by the kids schlepping stuff downstairs, upstairs. So you want to make sure that everything is removed. It's a tremendous amount of work.
Since there are such heavy food restrictions, people have to get creative with the things that they make to maintain Passover dietary guidelines.
Passover is a competition as to who can make what out of the limited of ingredients that you have, because you can't use all those different items that we spoke about. So therefore, now when you've got to make your chocolate chip cookies, you can't use your flour to make chocolate chip cookies. So now you're using potato flour, potato starch, and those items. And can you make it taste the most similar to during the year? And today, there are so many incredible recipe books that have come out by incredible people who put these together that you can't tell the difference today. They're coming out with crumbs. They come out with so many different types of crumbs that are like, they taste like real cornflake crumbs, which you're not allowed to have on Passover, but these taste the same. You would not be able to tell the difference. Today, they've perfected the barbecue sauces, just like the rest of the year, the duck wings, those sauces, duck sauces, and all that kind of stuff. So it's become a world where we are extremely spoiled.
But Rabbi Emanuel pointed out that in our modern era, there's usually plenty of substitutes available for kosher for Passover foods.
Everything is available for Passover. We are extremely spoiled here. Chocolates and barbecue sauces. One would think that for 8 days we could have survived it, but it doesn't seem as though we could, because we become so spoiled that everything is now available. And you go to the supermarket and you see shelves and shelves of the greatest candies, the greatest products, oils and flours and vinegars and apple cider vinegars and sauces of all types that you would never dream. That for 8 days we couldn't survive without them. But guess what? We obviously couldn't, because they're making them and they're selling them and they are extremely successful at doing so.
As with all holidays this year, celebrations were limited because of COVID, but Rabbi Emanuel talked about how he hoped people would still safely get into the spirit of things.
I think this year will be a little bit easier. There's still going to be a challenge, as you say, Gwen, with regards to those who obviously cannot get together with others are going to just have to celebrate it on their own and do it on their own. And it's a very, very tough thing. It's a very terrible thing to have to go through, because it's certainly not enjoyable. But we have to lift ourselves up as a community. We always lift ourselves up. We've been in dire straits and we always do lift ourselves up. And as you say, we're alive. We're able to practice our religion in a free society. So we have to take it and enjoy it and do what we can.
While Passover is a holiday that involves some dietary restrictions, there's another holiday happening this year which requires not eating any food altogether from sundown to sunset, the Muslim month of Ramadan. The Islamic calendar follows a lunar cycle, so it doesn't align with the Gregorian calendar, meaning Ramadan falls at different times each year. For the past few years, it has fallen in the middle of spring, and this year it will begin April 13th and end May 12th. I spoke to Hayat Akiki from the Muslim Students Association here at Concordia about how Muslims in Montreal and around the world will be marking Ramadan this year.
Hi, my name is Hayat Akiki. I'm a biology student at Concordia. I volunteer at the MSA as an external member. I go by she and her. You know, Ramadan, you have to fast for an entire month, and then what follows is the celebration of breaking your fast. And then later during the year, you have a celebration to sacrifice like certain animals and such. So these are the celebrations that we observe during the year. And these celebrations are gonna be and have been occurring during the years for the past decade, during spring and summer.
During the month of Ramadan, Muslims are expected to fast from sunrise to sunset. This fast is one of the five pillars of Islam and can also include the giving up of certain vices. Fasting is meant to be an act of worship, of getting closer to God, but it's also supposed to make you think more compassionately of those in need and work on patience and breaking bad habits. At the end of the day, you usually break your fast with a big meal in a large group. Many mosques put together soup kitchens to feed those who have less access to food. Even after a day of fasting, Hayat said preparing a large, delicious meal isn't as difficult as you'd think.
At the beginning, yeah, because like you're getting used to the rhythm of like you have to having to eat like three meals, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then but your fast, you have to stop eating for the entire day, and you have to prepare a lot of delicious food. You know, Middle Eastern food is really great, but. Like I said, we do a lot, we practice ever since we are very young, and we're used to it. We don't even need to taste the food. We don't use like recipes that are written down. You just like eyeball things and things turn out great at, even at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's going to be very tempting, but it's not.
I asked Hayat if there were any particular foods that were eaten at the breaking of the fast during Ramadan. Here's what she had to say.
The Islamic community is very diverse, and it comes like it's like there's a difference between like the religion and the culture, but I mean there are religious ties that comes with it. So you have religious foods, like I mean they're not necessarily religious, but you eat them during these ceremonies, like ma'amoul, which is made out of semolina, and it's like nuts inside of it, like pistachios and hazelnuts, or like walnuts or almonds, and it's really delicious. Or like you drink like very famous Bimto drinks, and it's like very popular all around the GC, like the Middle East. And you, when you here in such a diverse community in like Canada, you are so very introduced to so many different people from so many different backgrounds. So everyone is introducing their traditions and their cultures to you during these times, and they share their beautiful music as well, and we sit down and we have the same thing that we also follow together, like sitting down and praying or reading our holy book and such. So
of course this Ramadan will be difficult because it will be the second where travel and health restrictions have meant that many people around the world are separated from their families.
And I myself have been trying to go back home for a very long time, but it's been very difficult because like you're saving money and you can't really like travel at any time that you want. Borders are closed. Sometimes they open, sometimes they don't. They don't. And I haven't seen my family in a very long time, and I can only speak for myself. And that's just like my family back where I was raised, but the entirety of my family I haven't seen for an even longer amount of time. So it's just like me and my brother here at home. And I'm guessing it's the same situation for a lot of like people or student, like Muslim students here in Canada, because we come here either on our own or with a very small group of people. Like, it's rarely that you come here with the entirety of your family. And this is like the essence of each Muslim family, because like you want to sit down, you want to enjoy your like the food with your family and appreciate the food. I'm going to be scheduling days with my mom back home to sit down and break fast together through the phone. And then after like Ramadan is over, we're going to celebrate Eid together through the phone as well.
But even with the pandemic going on, Hayat said the Muslim community in Montreal and Concordia were still attempting to take steps to get into the spirit of Ramadan.
During the last Ramadan, I remember walking down the street and just like people, like I would say to people that, I mean, look obviously Muslim to me, I would tell them like Ramadan Kareem, which means like have a blessing Ramadan. And they would just like, you know, be appreciative of the comments that I've made. And we would still, I mean, the MSA that I am involved with would still, you know, create these opportunities or these charities that would allow help for our communities that are not able to get involved or not as lucky per se when it comes to a financial situation. So but I mean, this is not exclusive to the pandemic, it's just like an annual thing. But I mean, this is now we're finding more creative ways to do it without the risk of like harming people.
Even without COVID, sharing with community was one of the things Hayat said she really loved about Ramadan.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a similar answer that you're going to get from each and every single one of us. We just love our community. We love sitting down at the end, like at the end of like breaking your fast with families and friends, because you're sharing this delicious meal with the people that you love and appreciate, and you love the food, you love and like and appreciate the food that you're eating, because you haven't had it for a very long period of time. And everyone is coming together at the same specific time, and all like the entire world, like the entire Islamic world is doing the same exact thing. And it's very, it's a surreal moment.
After the break, we'll tie all of this together and take a look at some of the ways these celebrations overlap. You're listening to CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal. CGLO, 1690 AM in Montreal. Welcome back to The Squeaky Curd. In the previous two segments, we looked at four different cultures celebrating the transition from winter to spring with food. I want to reiterate that this was by no means a comprehensive look at these types of food traditions. We didn't cover foods connected to things like Christian Easter, the Hindu holiday of Holi, and the Persian New Year Nowruz, and countless other celebrations that happen around this time of year. Despite our inability to do a complete look at every single food tradition tied to the beginning of spring, there are a few themes that we can pull that are shared between just the four cultural celebrations we looked at for this episode. One of the things that stood out when I was collecting interviews for this episode was the tendency people had to indulge at their respective springtime celebrations after the long winter, with a few exceptions. Here's what Stephanie had to say of the pork rings that they have at her sugar shack.
My favorite things, it's for sure, even if I'm vegetarian, I have some, like, sometimes I cannot like stop in front of the pork rings, and sometimes I eat one of them, so I know it's bad, but it's like I cannot like say no, and this is my most favorite thing in my sugar shack. It's the pork rings for sure, but I also have a little crush on the fried pancakes, and I really love to drink the maple syrup. So it seems strange, but when my grandfather do the maple syrup, and just before that it's too much sweet, we can drink it. So, and in French we call it le réduit, and it's very, very good. So
this is a habit that Stephanie shares with Rabbi Emmanuel.
So I happen to like meat. I'm a meat eater. So I like a nice meat. I like a good piece of meat or chicken or a schnitzel or something of that nature. That's pretty much my favorite. My favorite is meat and chicken over Passover.
So you like the nice leg of lamb that we have on the Passover meal? Okay.
Well, I used to eat a lot of lamb. I've gone off that a bit now, like a nice piece of brisket, a piece of rib, you know, a real good piece of meat.
Kimberly didn't have much to say about certain kinds of meat that she likes to eat during maple season, but did divulge that she has a bit of a sweet tooth that gets satisfied at this time of year.
Yeah, so that's like my favorite part to talk about. I think going to ceremony and going to the longhouse, the corn mush, that's not something that I make. Mm-hmm. It's made by like people there at the longhouse. So when I go there and I eat it, it's like one of my favorites, and it's basically the ground corn. And they smash it and they add berries and they add the maple syrup and they just cook it. And it's just like, it's kind of like a rice pudding, but corn, and it's just delicious. It's one of my favorite. And then of course, second favorite would be like any kind of dessert.
Yeah.
Of course, there are exceptions to this, such as the Jewish keeping of kosher diet during Passover and the fasting done during Ramadan. Again, going kosher for Passover means different things for different people, but the main thing you're supposed to be giving up is leavened and grain products to represent the scant resources available during times of suffering. Ramadan, as Hyatt said earlier in the episode, puts the emphasis on abstaining from indulgences to put the good things in your life into perspective. Part of this gaining of perspective is giving back with charity work, and then after the sun sets, each fast during the month of Ramadan is broken with a community. But this coming together of community is something that indeed all of these cultures shared about their celebrations this time of year. Here's what Rabbi Emmanuel had to say about the unique feeling of the Jewish community in Montreal.
What's beautiful about Montreal is we have a very colorful community, call it that way. We have the Moroccan, the Sephardic, the Ashkenazic, the Hasidic, the Hungarian, many different types of community, and everybody on their traditions. As you say, they have different traditions, different ways of doing things, but when it comes to the celebration, everybody does it together, everybody shares together, everybody invites people when you can. Of course, now with the pandemic, that's not possible, but during good times, that's part of the enjoyment, everybody sharing all their customs together and doing it in a family unified way.
Hyatt explained a similar experience she has with the Muslim community, which she said may have a lot of different cultural divisions, but still feels like a whole when they come together to break the fast during Ramadan.
Well, Muslims in general are divided. I mean, they're connected with Islam itself, but all of us are pretty unique because we come from different cultures and backgrounds. And what brings us together is like our sects and you know, the traditions that we follow, like fasting and breaking the fast at the end of the month, or the holy month, let's say. So we start at the beginning of the month. You start to prepare for the fasting with family, and then you go out to the mosque where you start to interact with so many different Islamic communities all around the city. And even in the entire province in Canada, there's a big Islamic community where you sit around, do your prayers, break your fast, do donations and reliefs. And it goes on during the entire month. It's a beautiful moment, not necessarily for the food. It's a main thing, but what is really amazing about it is like the community. You wait together and you sit at the table with your family or the people that you have got along with, you, like in Islamic centers or MSAs or, you know, mosques around the city. So it's just like a beautiful time where you're just like, I am getting along with this person because something brought us together and we are sharing this beautiful thing that is food. It's something a lot of people do not have access to. So we're just like coming together to appreciate what we have.
And here's Kimberly explaining the feeling of oneness with community she experiences at a longhouse ceremony.
So we give thanks to everything. That's how it starts. And then usually there's songs that are sung. And everybody gets up in the longhouse and everybody dances our traditional dances. And personally, it's a feeling of, I don't know, it's just, it's excitement, it's hope. You know, you just get like that rush in your body, like everybody together, knowing that our ancestors did the same thing. It's like they're there with us. When you're dancing, like you can feel like the floor like rumbling because everybody's dancing and it's so intense. You know, sometimes depending on the season, especially right now because it's maple, everybody comes in with their dirty boots and then change into their moccasins when you get inside so your moccasins don't get dirty outside. But then there's like a little bit of mud. So as everybody's dancing, there's like this smoke rising as well sometimes. It's funny.
And as we've already covered, people have had to come together in different creative ways for the past year to keep each other safe during the pandemic. Here's one more story that Rabbi Emanuel shared.
And it was a beautiful story last year, which came out. It was the most magnificent story, which touched everybody's heart of this. I think it was actually in Côte Saint-Luc, where there was an older person in the apartment who was all alone. She was all alone. And there was a family on the same floor who knew that she was alone. Her children couldn't get to her. They live in the States. And she was all alone. She was in her 70s and maybe even older than that. And the sensitivity of this family was such that the gentleman of the family went and knocked on her door as the Seder was about to begin. And he told her, come and sit outside in the corridor. At least you'll be able to hear the Seder as I lead it. She was so touched by it because she sat there the entire night outside the corridor. And there she was, this lady who thought that she'd been sitting there alone.
While it's difficult to tell at this point, everyone is hopeful that this second pandemic spring will be the last and next year things will be a little bit more normal. Although some of the adaptations different communities made for COVID will be here to stay.
Hopefully in 2022, the pandemic will be behind us, but for sure, Ma Cabane à la Maison and our traditional lunchbox will stay in the future because I think that maybe some people prefer to live that kind of experience at home. And we will be happy to be there with the Ma Cabane à la Maison box. But in 2022, if we open our doors again, we wish that a lot. I think that it's going to be even nicer because we're going to be so happy to have people again in their place. And maybe it's going to be a little bit different too. Maybe the people will not want to share the plates again like it was in the past. For sure, we will adapt our enterprise as we did last year.
Thank you for listening to The Squeaky Curd. Today's episode wouldn't have been possible without the participation of Stephanie Lauren, Kimberly Cross, Rabbi Saul Emanuel, and Hayata Kiki. To learn more about Stephanie's Sugar Shack, visit chaletdesarabes.com. To learn more about Kimberly's work with Ganawage Tourism, visit ganawagetourism.com. To learn more about the Jewish Community Council of Montreal, visit jccmontreal.org. And to learn more about the Concordia Muslim Students Association, find them on Facebook at the page MSA Concordia. Our show illustration and logo were designed by Christina Rivera. Please join us next time as we take a look at our relationship with food through social media. From Gwen Rowley, you're listening to CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal. We're back to